And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of The Athletic Baseball Show. It is Wednesday, November 2nd. Three World Series games in the books. Phillies sitting on a 2-1 series lead as we record midday Wednesday on the East Coast. Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris and Britt Giroli. Britt on the scene in Philadelphia. The first question has to be, how loud was it at Citizens Bank Ballpark when Nick Castellanos made that sliding catch for the first out of the game?
Guys, it registered in Philadelphia as seismic activity twice at Citizens Bank Park last night, like earthquake level actual noise. And that was one of them. So that's how loud it was. And I actually was there the last time the Phillies, I was there in 08 and 09 when the Phillies were in the World Series. And I kind of vaguely remembered that it was a crazy crowd, but you know, time kind of, you know, you kind of forget. And then yesterday I was like, oh, whoa, that's the crowd again. You know, I didn't think they could get louder than the NLCS against the Padres, and they definitely got louder. There were so many like former Phillies out yesterday. It was like a huge city affair. And somebody said this to me, and I thought it was a perfect way to encapsulate what's going on in this city, that a city that really has fallen in love with the Eagles and football now is back in love with baseball again. I mean, this was a baseball city for so long, but the organization has just been such a mess, such a dumpster fire for so many years that the Phillies really became kind of an afterthought. And now you're seeing everyone get behind the city. You're seeing Eagles coming out and saying like, why are you pitching to Bryce Harper? You're seeing the Philadelphia Flyers. They all wore Phillies jerseys yesterday. So it's really become like the city of brotherly love is finally like using that attention towards the Phillies. And then of course, not to ramble, but did you guys hear about this in true Philly fashion? Two restaurants in Philly, like famed restaurants, refused to serve the Astros catering.
I did not hear about that.
Amazing. Like, so Philly, right? They were like, no. And they posted it on social media, too. Like, nah, bro, not feeding the Phillies. I mean, not feeding the Astros. And people were like, yes, yes, this is the way to do it in Philly. And it's like, what are the poor Astros eating here? I don't even know.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's one of these games. You look back at game three, I don't know how one play on the first out of the game can set the tone as much as a catch did, but it felt like that was the, oh, they're here, like, and they're ready to play, like everything's going to maybe go Philly's way. And then of course in the bottom of the inning, Bryce Harper hits that two-run homer, which went on to lead to all these other questions about Lance McCullers. Was Lance McCullers tipping pitches, or was Lance McCullers just too predictable and the Phillies simply had a great game plan prepared for how they wanted to attack him? So I'll throw this one to you first. You know, what's your read on this situation? Because there's a lot of theories floating around out there.
Yeah, I had the live blog, so that was something that I was really watching closely. And did retweet an account that purported to show McCullers tipping by raising his leg higher on breaking pitches, and just generally just sort of being more upright and taller on breaking pitches. And the evidence that there's that evidence, and then there's the evidence that Bryce Harper called Alec Boehm over before he was going to go step into the on-deck circle and sort of animatedly said something to him. Now, there's been a sort of back and forth on Twitter, and some people reported that, rival staffers say it was more likely that he kind of went over the scouting report with Boehm and was like, he's not throwing fastballs. I don't know if I believe that, because anybody in the stadium can see that Lance McCullers is not throwing fastballs. it flashes the pitch type up there at any time. Like if Boehm is watching, he can see that he's not throwing fastballs. So I doubt that that Harper said that. I think Harper thought he saw something. Now, I did close watch after that and try to see if I could see the tipping. And I've talked to some other major leaguers and former major leaguers since that said that they weren't sure that they could tell that he was tipping. So, you know, the other thing that I lean on is, yes, I do think he's being pretty predictable. Like, you know, it could have just been an advanced scouting thing where, you know, they just were prepared for these kinds of runs. Lance McCullers famously threw 24 breaking balls out of 25 before. You know, that's something that John Smoltz was talking about on the cast. What does he do to this game? He threw one fastball in the third inning. You know, so he was being predictable in that way. And even when he was trying to be unpredictable, he became predictable. It was so weird. In the fifth inning, he goes to the changeup, right? He throws 6 out of 8 changeups. Now, to JT Realmuto, those are right on right changeups. That surprised Realmuto. Realmuto struck out. He keeps throwing changeups. And Kyle Schwarber says on the sixth changeup in 8 pitches says, "Yo, bro, I knew that was coming," and deposits it in center field. Yeah. So, like, I don't know if he just gets into patterns or just really didn't trust his fastball. So everybody would just either keyhole the changeup or the slider. One of the home runs was on a fastball, and, you know, I rambled. But, you know, the thing is, I lean towards tipping because I don't think that Bryce Harper pulls Boehm over to say, you know, he's not throwing his fastball.
I thought when he said, you could hear him do it on the broadcast in real time when he did it. I thought when he did it, what he said was so quick that it had to be something related to a visual cue. It couldn't have been a full on scouting report because it was less than a full sentence worth of information. That's the way I interpret it as it happened. So I don't know. That was just my take. Britt, how about you? Any other things you've seen or heard that lead you to one side or the other of this debate?
Yeah, I talked to guys who said watch his glove more so than his hand, that the positioning of his glove was further away from his face, I guess. And that's something that as a hitter you can see very quickly. You know, you could see before, almost like before they start, before they really get into the meat of their delivery, right? So I thought that was interesting. McCullers, though, I was in the Astros clubhouse postgame, and McCullers did not, at least publicly, want to play into it at all. He said, "I got whooped. You know, I didn't execute pitches. This has nothing to do with tipping." But you do wonder if they knew what was coming, because McCullers hadn't pitched in a World Series in 5 years, sure. But he also isn't a guy who's home run prone. This isn't Justin Verlander, who is a little bit more of a home run prone guy. This was so wildly out of character. And as you said, with Harper, who later Boehm was asked about that and said, "That's between us," which again adds to the speculation that he said something like, "Watch his arm or watch his leg or watch something," right? That was prime for watch this, right? If he does this, this is coming. You're right. It was so quick that it wasn't a full scouting report. And, you know, guys do talk all the time between at bats and between innings and things like that. But the fact that Harper sought him out made you think that he had something that was not in the scouting report. That nobody else had, right? That he had kind of cracked some kind of code.
Right. If the advanced scouts had already said it, you're not like, "Oh, remember what the advanced scouts said?" You had the hitter meeting, you know?
Remember this. Also, what people don't realize is there are people in these dugouts who their sole job is to pick apart and look for guys tipping pitches in the postseason, especially. There are guys who sit in the video room. There are guys who don't play whose entire job is to try to crack the code of what the pitcher is doing. It seemed like the Phillies figured something out with Lance McCullers. Yeah, maybe he didn't execute. Maybe he got too predictable. Maybe they knew he was not going to throw any fastballs. That's all fine and well, but it seemed like they knew what was coming. And I think everybody in the stadium knew he wasn't pitching well, except for Dusty Baker.
Something that was really cool, by the way, in the first inning was a production technique that they actually used on the broadcast. As Bryce Harper's plate appearance was beginning, they piped in the PA announcer from the stadium and his at-bat music, right? And they kind of shot it like MLB The Show. So it felt different when Bryce Harper was stepping up to the plate for that first plate appearance, by the way. So, Britt, you were there. So you got to experience the real thing. But I thought that was a really nice thing that they put together to make everyone watching at home kind of feel more like they were there. And then, of course, with the homer, it turned into this really kind of classic sort of postseason moment.
And it was like pretty. I mean, we've been down on, you know, at least the Twitterati have been down on Smoltz in some of the announcing. I thought it was great announcing. I mean, they went over the fact that, you know, Lance McCullers is throwing all these breaking balls, and that allows you to sit breaking ball. And if he leaves it up a little bit, bang it. And then that's exactly what happened. Like, it was a little bit of a middle. I will say this, like, I don't think there was any stuff missing from McCullers. When I looked at the movement profiles, they're all the same as normal. And he was up 2 ticks on the fastball. So I think his stuff was there. The one thing that I had said going into the game was location does matter. Command does matter. And Ranger Suarez had much better command. Ranger Suarez commanded all 6 of his pitches better than any I have the stat location plus that looks at the locations of pitches. Ranger Suarez commanded all 6 of his pitches better than Lance McCullers commanded any of his over the regular season. So it was a battle of command and stuff. Now, if Lance McCullers had even a tiny bit better command, then he might have gone totally differently because he does have pretty wipeout stuff. But Suarez was the one that executed his game plan, had the command. He did have an extra 2 ticks of velo himself, but he was able to sort of harness that and still command his pitches. And I thought it was really fun to watch Suarez. It's that kind of, I have 6 pitches, I can command them, I can put them in different quadrants, and you don't really know what's coming kind of pitching a little bit more than McCullers being like, I have this awesome slider, and you're going to see it over and over again.
Yeah, it is interesting you mentioned the stuff, you know, because McCullers said last night, my stuff was there, and I know because I can check on the iPad, you know, and that's what people don't realize. Like, he's checking.
His movement was the same.
Yeah, he's checking, and he's looking between innings, and, you know, there was nothing super alarming. So he felt like he just didn't have a good game plan. And I agree with you, DVR, on Smoltz. I think he loses me when he tries to go like big picture analysis, like angry man at cloud with some of the analytic trends.
It's not as good as it used to be.
Yes, but he's never better than when he's analyzing batter pitcher matchups, because obviously you have a Hall of Fame pitcher. You have this mindset, and he's able to say like, oh, I would go with this pitch here. Oh, I wouldn't go here. And he's almost always right when it comes to that stuff. When he digs into the pitcher and the batter and kind of what goes in that little chess match, he's terrific. I think people like to hate on him for some of his other comments when he gets too far out of his lane. But when he just hones in on stuff like last night, he makes for a really informed experience.
Yeah, I think Britt answered the title question you had there. It was the first part.
The first part.
Why'd they leave him in so long? Because McCullers stuff seemed fine.
But
you have 9 good relievers.
I know there's big butts.
You have like 9 arms you can use out there.
Yes, that's exactly what I was wondering. It's like we've done throughout this entire postseason is praise the Astros for having pitching depth on pitching depth on pitching depth. They'll never run out of pitching. If a game goes to extra innings, it favors the Astros because their bullpen's better. Their starters they don't need are better. Everything about their depth is better. And in a game where the Phillies, I think, kind of clearly had figured things out against McCullers, even though he did have a stretch of 2 1/3, I think, where either no one reached or he just kind of settled down for a little bit, letting him go back through the lineup for the start of the third time through seemed like a huge mistake. Jose Urquidy pitched for the first time in this postseason, and it was too late, right? So
I think
why not go to that bullpen a little sooner?
I think the answer is they don't trust Jose Urquidy and maybe even Luis Garcia, because if you think about it, Luis Garcia didn't come into that Mariners game that he pitched so well. He didn't come into it until like the 11th or 12th or something, right? Like he was like the last pitcher standing, you know? They were like, okay, finally, Luis Garcia. They're not going to him earlier in games. And they went to, and just the way they used Jose Urquidy last night says they don't trust Jose Urquidy. So we may see a really good pitching staff that's really deep, but they may see a pitching staff of guys that they don't want to go to. So when they thought they could win the game, they thought the next pitcher would be Ryan Stanek, right? Because he's a really good reliever. So when they did change, they went to Ryan Stanek. They didn't even go to Jose Urquidy first, because the plan was, if we think we can win the game, we use Ryan Stanek and we start using our relievers. We don't use Jose Urquidy. Jose Urquidy is the plan when we've lost the game already. So they must just not.
It was 7-0.
I know. So they must just not trust Jose Urquidy.
Yeah, or I guess
it was 7-0. Who cares? Just put him in.
I think they were using.
Yeah, well, that part, that is weird by that time. Yeah.
Makes no
Yeah.
sense.
That was the thing. If you even go to your Keedy when you do, or don't go to him sooner, go to Stanek a little sooner because the game still mattered at that point. That either way, I think you might be right about how they view Jose Urquidy. They might look at him now the way they looked at Jake Odorizzi in the past, where you're happy to have that guy in the regular season, you get to the postseason, and it's okay if he pitches, but you don't really want him to be out there. I think with Luis Garcia, maybe there
He
was more thought
dealt.
in game four and game five. Yeah, he pitched great. He pitched really well once he came in, but maybe saving Luis Garcia for the later part of the series was part of the thinking. I mean, there's any number of twists and turns here, but I
Because
just thought it was
Javier, tonight,
weird.
in the next game tonight, Christian Javier is probably not going to go that deep. He's a fastball slider guy, and he doesn't have great command either. I think that they'll be happy to get 5 innings out of him.
Yeah, but here's the thing that flummoxes me, and so many people in the press box last night were like, what is going on? Dusty managed that game like they were willing to just concede the game. As soon as it got to be 4-0, they left McCullers out there. He should, as soon as it was 4-0, he should have been out. I know he then pitched like two scoreless frames. As soon as Marsh at the bottom of the order gets a hit, you do not allow Lance McCullers, who clearly doesn't have it, to face the Schwarber in the top of the lineup a third time through, right? That's when you go to your bullpen. But he didn't. He let the guy hang out there, and McCullers even kind of made one comment about how he was still out there last night. So that you waive the game, and then you bring in Stanek, who is not like a. That's when you do go to the guys you don't trust because the game
that
is over.
Should have been our
That's when you
Urquidy,
do.
Urquidy,
that's when you do wave the white flag. So it was very. It seemed like at 4-0, Dusty was like, oh, "We're just going to lose this game." You have a bullpen full of guys. Maybe you don't trust those starters that are in the bullpen, but watch what the Phillies do. Rob Thomson several times has brought in Alvarado or another high leverage guy very early on in the game. Dusty could have done that. He could have gone, all right, we're still here at 4-0. Let's keep it here. I'm going to go to my relievers. And it's not like they have one or two good relievers. They've got a parade of actual good relievers. If you
yeah,
were
even
not
if they
counting
pitch
those other
Stanek for the
guys.
fifth, even if they pitch Stanek for the fifth, it's 5-0 versus 7-0. I mean, it's just easier, you know, it's just closer.
Exactly. And you have a chance. So it just seems like, and Dusty did this in game one with Verlander. He does not manage with urgency in these World Series games. These World Series games, every game is a must-win game.
Yeah.
And it just didn't seem like, it doesn't seem like he's managing with the same urgency that the
Maybe
Phillies
the
are on
thought
the other
is.
side.
Maybe the thought is the, you know, the there is that depth that's a strength. And in the next two games, you know, given that they're 3 in a row, just have everybody healthy and really go hard on these next two. But you're right. Why not go hard on game three?
Yeah.
It's like,
it's very
well, we'll
odd.
Go hard on games 4 and 5, but in game three, you know, game three is a big, you know, momentum shift in terms of the teams that win game three and go ahead 2-1 usually win.
You know there are 6 days left of the season at most. You also know that your relievers have had 2 days off. Everyone has had 2 days off because of the rainout.
Yeah.
So you get, let's guess what? Put your big boy pants on. This is the time to pitch those relievers 3 days in a row if you need to. I don't understand the lack of urgency at all. And you wonder if this is going to end up costing the Astros, because last night was a more winnable game on paper. Now you have Nola. You know you're going to get Wheeler, right? Like, so the Phillies now feel really good. Because they won game three and they've got 2 games at home where they
I'm
haven't
so
lost
annoyed.
all season.
I made my pick picking the Astros last night when there was no rain delay. And I thought for a second.
Oh, when it was
I thought
Syndergaard.
And I thought for a second, you know what? It's Suarez. I should change my pick. But, you know, the pick pieces are written. So that felt kind of like, you know, that felt kind of like icky. You know, I'm going to change my pick, you know. So I just stuck with it. But I definitely, as soon as they announced Suarez for that, I was like, ooh, this is a way closer to a pick'em game. Because Suarez is pretty decent. Now, what is the plan for tonight? Because I know I've seen Nola, but I've also seen Nola slash. Like, is Nola not actually starting the game?
No, it's Nola, as far as I know. Okay. Nola and Javier. But, I mean, you do wonder, because the crazy thing is the Phillies won that game last night with their B bullpen. So they got all their A arms tonight. So Nola only needs to go 5.
Yeah.
Five, you know what I mean?
You'd love it if you'd go 6.
But he's on short, is he on short rest?
Nope.
No.
Wow.
No.
The rain delay.
The rainout really helped the Phillies.
It really
more so
did.
Than it helped the Astros. And so now you're looking at, you know, 6 would be beautiful. But if even if he goes 5 and he's okay.
Then you always think that you can get maybe three combined from Alvarado and Sir Anthony. So
yeah,
that's the really important thing about the way Rob Thomson is managing the bullpen right now, too. He's not just looking at three outs per reliever. He's looking at numbers between three and six and trying to put the pieces together based on how the matchups are lining up and where guys are at in terms of.
Oh, and they've done a really good job, too, of using Eflin just mostly against the back end of the lineup. Mm-hmm. So Eflin comes out and there's more righties in the back end of the lineup. He can do that righty on righty sinker. And sort of, the back end of the Astros lineup needs to come through a little bit. That's why David Hensley was playing last night. That's why they've cycled through Aledmys Diaz and Trey Mancini. And it's been a little bit of a problem spot for them. DH, the bottom of the lineup, producing. So, that's where they've been hiding Eflin, and then using Alvarado, for the mostly lefty part of the lineup. And Sir Anthony for the mostly righty part of the top of the lineup. And it's been, I mean, I think Rob Thomson's done a pretty good job managing. I think he's really opened my eyes. And, it is nice that, people talk about his humility. Like, he seems like a guy who can listen and listen to all sorts of, and he grew up in analytics. He grew up in the Yankees. That's growing up in analytics, but he has a pretty good feel also as well. And people seem to really like him, and he's managing the heck out of this series.
Yeah. Yeah. He was on the Yankees when they won against Philly in 2009. He was part of that staff. So I think he's kind of seen it all. What I like is, as you said, he's aggressively managing. He's managing like this is the World Series. Sometimes the save's in the fifth inning. And I think too often, like we saw with the Padres and Josh Hader, right? These guys wait for the perfect opportunity, and they're so obsessed with like, well, the numbers and the blowback, and this is how we do it. And that's fine to a point, but we're in the World Series now. You go with your gut. You lose with your best. And I like the way that he's not afraid to bring Alvarado in the middle of the game because, hey, this might be the game. And you saw it. That's how they stole a game one win. And you might see it again tonight because remember that the Astros jumped all over Nola.
Right.
And they were up 5-0 really quick. So you might see that again tonight because the Phillies have a good lineup. And if he feels like this is where the game is, I like that he's kind of not afraid. Yeah.
Plus, he didn't have to use Alvarado and Sir Anthony. So if he uses Alvarado in the fourth, to keep it within one run or something, even if they're losing, that's okay. You could use him the next day, and he'll get a rest day after that. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can do whatever he wants tonight. It's pretty cool.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Would either of you like to join me on the Phillies side of the picks for the series? You get one waffle opportunity mid-series, so you can use your waffle now if you'd like to join me.
I honestly think they might win this now. I thought last night was – they could win it here, and it wouldn't surprise me, which is crazy.
I'm not willing to go quite that far yet. I think I'm sticking with six, but
– Because, low-key, the Astros, you talked about the bottom of the lineup. The heart of the lineup last night was, like, 0-15, 0-16. They did nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, I just don't think that continues. I've got a lot of belief in Yordan Alvarez and Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve. I think that the lineup starts to come through a little bit. I also think Yordan Alvarez, the one piece of kryptonite he has is a really good lefty sinker. So I was looking through all his heat charts, and there is actually inside low lefty sinker. Is the biggest blue spot I could find on Yordan Alvarez's heat map. So I think that Suarez is the perfect pitcher to get Yordan Alvarez out. And now he's been kind of used so much you know, I don't think he can show up tonight. So I think Yordan Alvarez goes deep tonight. You know, I think, you know, I think that they get Javier is a really underrated pitcher. He's a top 10 pitcher by Stuff Plus. He's got great, great, great stuff. So if it is a night where he can command it, I think he could even actually push that. I know I said five, but I think he could push it 6-7 if he's getting a ton of outs, if he's just striking everybody out. And he has that kind of stuff. So I could I can easily see a game tonight where Javier shoves, Yordan Alvarez homers, and they even the series. And if they do that, they still have a Verlander game. I know that to some that didn't sound like an asset. I know, but I think Verlander's a very good pitcher still. And I think they're set up in game 6 and 7 to have really good pitchers, have the pitching advantage, and be at home.
All right, so you're staying on the Astros, I think.
I'm going to stay on that. The Astros, yeah.
Okay. Britt, it sounds like you were willing to move. You're going to the Phillies?
I'm going to move. I think it's going to be the Phillies. And honestly, I don't know. They haven't lost a game at home this year here, guys. It's a different atmosphere. I saw the Padres kind of, I don't want to say wilt, but they were definitely. They were definitely a little intimidated by. Here's the thing. If the Phillies get out in front like they did last night, it's very, very hard to come back here. I think the crowd takes over. And you know, you saw it last night. How did the Astros not score any runs off some of these relievers? I get they didn't win the game; they were in an early hole. But I was just waiting for it to be 7-4.
I don't think it's intimidation, though. I mean, the Astros have been more yelled at than any other team in baseball.
They have.
They are used to people saying things to them, man.
I think
Bregman's almost embraced the heel at this point, where he's like, you know, like Correa a little bit, like, what you got?
Yeah, if Philly comes out and jumps out and gets a run or two off Javier, like I think they could steal another one just because they're set up a little bit better with their bullpen. So they haven't used any of those guys.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know.
Early lead will be kind of huge tonight.
Yeah, is Nola going to learn from his last outing, or is he going to, you know, is he going to make the adjustment or not? That seems to be kind of one of the big keys of the game, right? Because they're not going to keep climbing out of these 5-0 holes. So is he going to make the adjustment?
And Nola has better command and a larger mix than Javier. And this, didn't we just play this game?
Yeah.
So I can't believe I'm picking the Phillies now to win the World Series. This is the craziest thing Do you guys think this is the most improbable World Series if they win? Just because of how bad they were?
It's
up there.
I don't know, because I think we make a lot of comparisons to this team to the Nationals of 2019, right? And how they manage their roster. But then you also think about how bad that Nationals team was up until like mid-May that year. And they turned everything around. And the Phillies, when they let Joe Girardi go, switched to Rob Thompson as their manager, they became kind of a different team from that point forward. And I think sometimes we take the full season and we almost put too much weight on the very beginning when things were different. And like that waters down how good a team was. We talked about it, I think, on our preview show that the Phillies were an underperforming team relative to projections from Derek Cardi's system, the bat, throughout the season. So they were probably better than we realized all along. So it may be surprising by record, surprising in that regard, but not as surprising when you look at it more from a pure numbers perspective of like what they put on this roster. This is an expensive roster with star power that can do damage. So it's just finally playing the way it's supposed to over the last 100 games combined compared to how it played in the first 70 or so games.
Yeah. The Nationals were improbable, but they did not fire Davey. He was on the hot seat, but they didn't fire their manager, which I think, remember we talked about this, wasn't it the Marlins, the last team that won the World Series in a series where they fired a manager? Also, what people forget about the Nationals is they were bad, but they were hurt. They had Trey Turner and Anthony Rendon on the injured list. And then they had nobody basically playing up the middle, and it was just awful baseball. So once those guys came back, they played well. The Phillies, it was just like, what's going on here? Why are they not performing? It wasn't like they were without, you know, Schwarber and Harper and all these big stars for most of the year. And then they turned it around when they came back. Was it really as simple as getting rid of Joe Girardi? Was that really it?
I don't know. I will always wonder if this team could have still figured it out with him, because I don't, as much as we like the way Rob Thompson managing this series and throughout the postseason, the roster's the same. And the injuries they dealt with, the biggest injury they dealt with was Bryce Harper in the second half. They played really well for a stretch without Harper when I think plenty of people thought they were going to fall apart for good reason, right? He's their best player. It's just the way it can go for a wobbly team.
Well, how about this for maybe a comparison? You have to remove 2010 and 2012 from your brain, but the 2014 Giants, they went in July 12 and 14, August 16 and 12, September 14 and 12. On the season, they were 88 and 74. And the postseason, they went 12 and 5.
Mm.
They had as starters on their team, Gregor Blanco, Matt Duffy, or Joe Panic. I don't know. Dan Uglow was on that team.
Is that the World Series? You made all the errors.
Yeah, no. This was the World Series where they said they don't have the pitching, right? They had Bumgarner and Kane, and then behind them, Hudson, the ghost of Tim Lincecum, Jake Peavy near the end of his career. They didn't want to pitch those guys, you know? And that's why Bumgarner had to throw a third of their innings. Now, the funny thing is, that was a team that I thought of as a map for the Phillies, as well. Like, just get the most out of your best pitchers. But Nolan Wheeler haven't pitched that well, and it's been actually the other pitchers that have held the Astros down. So I don't know exactly what's going on there.
I think
this is weird.
Yeah, I think a lot of this just comes back to how the playoffs work. And the 2014 Giants, at that point, that was their third World Series in 5 years.
Right, so there was the, like, we've done this before.
There's no element of surprise to it, whereas, the Phillies is their first trip back to the World Series in 13 years. So it's been a little while.
So I had this conversation yesterday, and I actually may, I don't know, do some kind of column on this, but someone brought up this point that this year has been super long, right? As we were talking about off air, the GM meetings, basically whoever wins, they're going to go from the parade to the GM meetings. But it's been super long. They cut down a lot of the travel days in the postseason. And we've had a really high quality play. We haven't had there's not this huge star on the bench for either team. We haven't had a lot of injuries in the postseason. They've gotten really lucky considering they jammed a 162 game season and an expanded playoffs into a lockout season.
I'm surprised that the quality as well, given the circumstances. It's been a great series so far. Yeah. Great playoffs overall, though, too.
I do think he's just some luck there because, these two teams, if Bryce Harper's broken thumb had happened at a different time, everything is different. And then Alex Bregman had that
hit by pitch, though. That's not from overuse.
Oh, right. Yeah. I think that maybe some teams did some more load management this year, just healthy days off. I don't know if I'm biased by being in San Francisco, but they definitely did that a lot here. There were days where they're just told Brian Crawford, even though he felt fine, that he had to sit. So, I think their teams are doing a little bit more of that. But yeah, it is kind of amazing. Maybe the everyday mentality just worked out for them this year.
Yeah. But they've been great games. Like, pretty much, I think, I don't know what you guys think, but I think this has been a really exciting postseason. And they got really lucky that there just wasn't, a rash of injuries given what they tried
to do. The championship series were a weird lull. There was, everything was, really kind of exciting going up. And then the championship series were blowouts, both of them. Then we had to wait 5 days for the World Series.
I thought the NL was better. It was more closely played than it seemed. The Astros Yankees was just the steamroll. The Yankees looked dead.
That just happened. Astros Yankees just happened. The Astros can't be this dead. The Astros can't have just turned into the Yankees. I think they've still got life.
They ate the Yankees and then became them.
Right.
Terrible. Right. Yeah. No, that's not what happened.
But then you do wonder, though, Dusty Baker didn't really make any managerial decisions in that series at all. And I feel here he's twice left his starter in too long to the detriment of the series.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see if anything changes with the approach at all as we move through the series. I would lean no. I think this is this is what you get. This is who Dusty is, for better or for worse. These are his tendencies, and this is the way he runs.
Well, I don't know if that – maybe it's a reaction because, in San Francisco, the big moment that everyone remembers is taking Russ Ortiz out too early.
Hmm.
Game I think it was game six of that World Series in 2002. He goes and he takes Russ Ortiz out early, and he also gives him the ball as a souvenir as he walks off the mound, which people were like, that's bad mojo. Because at that point, they were up 3-2, and they were up in the game, and he was going to Fernando Rodney, and it seemed like that was going to be shutting the door, and they were going to win the World Series right there. And then that's not what happened.
Well, we've got a few other topics we should get to. The Gold Glove Awards were given out. They just kind of happened, basically.
Everything's got to happen at the same time because of the lockout.
Yeah, everything's all jammed together. I just had a couple of things that kind of caught my eye. Ramon Urias getting a gold glove at third base is kind of awesome because Ramon Urias didn't play that much third base prior to this season. So it's not an easy place to win the gold glove in the first place. So to do that as a relatively new position, at least for an everyday kind of role, that I thought was one of the better stories. And Vlad Jr., getting a gold glove. How many people were predicting any gold gloves in the career of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? I think that was a bit of a pleasant surprise to see that. I know as a prospect, he's a third baseman. He's moved to first, but still, I think that's a give some credit where credit is due situation.
Yeah, I thought the gold glove to Nolan Arenado is not one that on the surface seems at all like a stretch, but Ke'Bryan Hayes, and the Pittsburgh Pirates tweeted this out on their Twitter channel, so I'll give their PR team credit on this. Ke'Bryan Hayes led all of baseball in defensive runs saved. So he also beat Nolan Arenado in outs above average and was second to him in ultimate zone rating. Now, I think ultimate zone rating UZR is the worst publicly available defensive stat that's out there. And so if you lead all the baseball and defensive runs saved and are the best third baseman by outs above average, to me, you're probably the best defensive third baseman. However, as a waffler, I have to admit, Nolan Arenado is excellent and he's won a bunch of gold gloves. And if you just want to give him the sort of shine of the incumbent, he hasn't shown us that he's fallen off. So he given the gold glove again. I'm okay with it, I guess.
This is boxing. Ke'Bryan Hayes has to knock him out to
yeah.
Can't win on decision.
We have to actually see some, like, it has to be like a little bit more obvious that Arenado has declined. I think. Yeah. I think there's some of that, I always had this theory about the Oscars, which is you get nominated for the movie where you should have won.
Yes.
And then you win later on, when you've become more established as a leading man or whatever. So, I think that the Oscars kind of worked that way, and I wouldn't be surprised if Gold Gloves had a little bit of that to them.
Yeah, I agree. There's a fair amount of politics. I think when they announced just the nominees, people were like, there's some snubs, and there always is, right? And I think some of the guys, even in the mix, like Juan Soto, kind of made you wonder, like, wait, what? So Juan Soto is nominated but not Manny Machado, right? Like, you kind of look at it and you're like, wait a second.
Right, because Juan Soto had I defended him and say that I think he can get back to being a good defender. He had an awful defensive year.
Awful. Just and it was bad. On full display in the playoffs.
There was every time, like, I remember I said I had some trade analysis where I was like, and he's no slouch in the field, and people were like, really? And then after people had that feedback, I was like, I'm going to close watch him now. And I was like, yo, it's awful.
Yo, low key, every time the ball was hit out to him in the NLCS, you were like, is it going to be an out?
Maybe, he lost maybe a lot of sprint speed. I don't know why. Maybe he just focused on bulking up for power or something, but he lost a lot of sprint speed. His jumps weren't great. The arm has never been, plus plus. So I don't know. It was a poor year for him out there.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he got nominated.
Yeah. So the gold, I mean, they're a little political. It was kind of cool. Cleveland had 4 Gold Glove winners, which is like an organizational record. So shout out to them. That stood out as well.
I don't think that they didn't deserve any of them.
That was how that team was built, right? The hitting was always like, can they hit? But the pitching and defense was there. And, I think It is unfortunate with the way everything is kind of sandwiched together. It was a little bit of an afterthought yesterday at the World Series. All of a sudden, it was like, oh, the Gold Glove Awards just dropped. It's like, well, it's game three of the World Series, so who really cares?
Right? Like, everyone's swim moved right past that. Like, yeah. What if they announced the Cy? I mean, it's not going to work out that way, but barely, you know? Like, the World Series is going to end, and on that Thursday, we're going to start getting, like, Rookies of the Year.
Basically, and like honestly, it would have been like a great time for like a news dump if MLB had any negative news, because it's just like, the World Series is going on still. Yeah. Like, who cares? The World Series is still going on, which is why I think they should have had Rob Manfred address the media in a group, and he didn't, because you know, no matter what he says, it kind of makes headlines negatively. But honestly, the World Series is going to absorb all that anyway. So
yeah, he got a pass on those Oakland comments, which
because he didn't speak. I literally asked him. I personally asked him in a group of like 20 people, and he just walked.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
He just walked away. Didn't even say no. He said,
"I'm done talking about Oakland," which people on Twitter really enjoyed.
Oh, that's answer to your question.
Yeah, that's my question. And then
I saw a lot of people tweet that out without.
Of course, because they were in the vicinity, right? But no one wants to actually be the person who asks him a question. But then he did talk to the LA Times later that night and walked back everything he said to Mad Dog.
Which actually, honestly, if you saw the full context of the Mad Dog interview, you know, he goes on right after he says, you know, some stuff about Vegas to be like, yeah, Oakland can still work out. And I don't know if it's going to work out in Vegas, but he walked it back even in the interview with Mad Dog. But basically, he said he's just not very upbeat about the chances of there being baseball, a new stadium in Oakland. And I think that's the same thing that you feel here in Oakland, because we had, you know, in Oakland, there was the political will on some level. There was leadership in place that would have been positive votes in terms of the city council. The mayor had actually made this something that she wanted. So that was a good sign. Now there's going to be an election. There might be new people in these places. You have to kind of get all the votes again. The idea in Vegas is the opposite, which is that nobody wanted to. This wasn't a good political idea to say, give us more money for another team before the elections. And the thinking is that after the elections, they'll come out and be like, all right, time to get the A's, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens. It'd be much more interesting to see what happens, what people are saying in December than it is in October, because the elections, you know, it's always a political football in terms of, you know, do we want to do the stadium or not? And in most places, asking for taxpayers for money, especially if you're Vegas, when you just ask them for money for a Raiders stadium, you know, that you're going to come asking again. I think it's not something you want to admit before the elections.
I think so long as the owners keep Rob Manfred as the commissioner of Major League Baseball, the strategy is basically, how many damage strokes can you avoid if you're playing golf? Are you going to bogey this hole? Are you going to double bogey this hole? Or are you going to triple bogey this hole? Because that's like the best three outcomes you can get with Manfred delivering news. People are always mad, no matter what he says. Yeah. So the goal should be to bogey as many holes as possible in this case.
That means Friday news dumps, walk it back, you know, carefully manage.
Maybe not saying the worst thing out
to be like, that's not exactly what he said, you know.
Yeah.
No, what he was trying to say is this. Off the record, I can tell you this.
I just think, and I was talking to somebody in baseball about this, that the fact that he's not good with the media is just bad for the sport. Because you see, I mean, listen, like, you know in the NBA, Adam Silver is beloved, right? You know, not every commissioner is going to be like that. But you also know that there is an art to, and every GM in baseball does this, to talking and being pleasant and saying nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's helpful because the reporters are like, well, he was nice. And then you go upstairs and you realize you got absolutely nothing.
Right.
But you came away with a positive experience, right? You don't get that experience when you're talking to the commissioner. And because of that, it seems like he talks less and less. And I think it's just not good for the sport of baseball to not have this front-facing commissioner talking at every big event, not holding court at the World Series and, you know, the GM meetings and the winter meetings and spring training. And, you know, Gary Bettman is loathed by most of the NHL except for the owners. But that guy talks. He talks multiple times during the Stanley Cup. I was talking to a hockey reporter yesterday And they were like, well, Bettman doesn't talk that much. You know, he talks at the Stanley Cup and he talks here and here and here. And I'm like, it's already twice as much as we hear from Rob Manfred, who really talks two, maybe three times a year in a big setting. So
you get that BBWAA meeting at the All-Star game.
That's, you know, maybe a spring training one. Maybe.
Maybe, but that's not one central one because, you know, it's all over the place.
Yeah, and so it's like, I just think for a sport that's trying to grow and trying to continue to stay relevant in the national spotlight, to do less media, less availability, is just bad for the sport.
Maybe someone told him it's better if you don't talk so much.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they have figured that out.
In this case, I don't think that was good advice in the long run, even though it probably... It makes each time he speaks like a little less terrible. It still doesn't help. It doesn't push things in the right direction overall.
Well, I mean, in this case, the Oakland thing, he is just advocating for what the owners want. You know, the owners want free stadiums and he's advocating for that. So, you know, he's doing his job, I guess.
Yeah. You know, maybe Las Vegas won't give him a free stadium. So there's always that possibility.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
We had a question come in from one of our listeners, OJ Oren. And the question was about Aaron Judge and whether he is the typical free agent, big contract that could go wrong because of his age, because of career home road splits this year. That wasn't really a factor at all. He was just great everywhere, of course, in this amazing 2022 season that he had. But especially with the age and size combination. And I think the size argument in particular is strange because there are so few comps in baseball. There are very few players in baseball history that are built like Aaron Judge. So I don't know if you can look at how a handful of guys aged over time years ago and say, Aaron Judge isn't going to age well. But I'm interested to know, especially given where he's at in his career right now, do you see Aaron Judge's long-term contract, which will be a great contract and we want players to get paid, do you see this being the kind of contract that is regretted in the end, similar to Miguel Cabrera's contract with the Tigers and, you know, Albert Pujols' deal with the Angels, where he ended up back in St. Louis, and all of those kinds of nightmare, air quotes, free agent contracts that we've seen over the years. And there aren't even that many of them. I feel like this is a boogeyman in some ways. Like, this is a thing that fans and people who love baseball fear more than they probably should. But is there legitimate collapse concern in a 7 or 8 year deal for Aaron Judge coming off an historically great season? I'll throw this one to you first, Eno.
There is always. I just saw a 2011 Jeff Zimmerman piece where he looked at how star players age versus the rest of the population, and there was no meaningful difference. I was a little surprised to see that, but I think what happens is stars play at such a high level, they can age like everybody else and still be good. And so that there is an aspect of that where Aaron Judge just put up, you know, a top 20 season of all time, and he had an 11-win season. That is such an amazing season that you can build in all this decline off of that, and still he'll be super valuable. So I think everybody's going to want to sign him, and I think nobody's going to sign him to 10 years. So I think nobody wants him at 40 because of the size and the age and the durability, and he's already 30. But everybody wants him on a 7-year deal. I would expect him to break the average annual salary record for position players, which right now is Mike Trout at $35 million. So if you give him $36 million for 7 years, about $252 million. That's my prediction. 7 years, $252 million. And he's only a real problem for the team in maybe one of those years.
What do you think, Britt?
I think his first number starts with 3. You think it's 252, you know? I think
it would start with 3 if he went to 10, but I just don't think that anybody wants to go to 10 years.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a contract that's kind of structured as like having some opt-outs and has that total value of $300 million. I think that matters to a lot of guys, right?
Maybe he has to vest.
Yeah, like certain games maybe played. Like,
we'll give you 10, but you got to vest the last 3 somehow, you know?
Yeah, I think you add in these like incentives, and I think for him a big one is games played, because you're worried about injury later in the career, right? So
yeah, 100%.
Maybe you structure it like
I might
that.
Sign him to 10 if I say, like, in order to get years 8, 9, and 10, you have to have at least 500 plate appearances, you know, in the year before.
Yeah, because now we're in this realm of like the DH, and I mean, obviously it was in the American League before that, but so like it doesn't necessarily matter if he ages out of playing in the field, as long as he's healthy enough to hit in his later years, that's what's probably going to be the most value anyway, right? He's not going to play this really great outfield for 10 years. Especially, I wonder
think I want to play him in center field next year, you know?
Yeah, like I wonder how big he is, how he ages, right? Yeah. You do wonder about that.
I think projecting body type is really tough because he's not built quite the same way as Pujols or Miggy. He plays the outfield. Those guys played first base. And I think there's more athleticism with Judge at this age than there was with those two players at that age. I'm only using those two because they were the ones that were mentioned in the email. I do think the strikeout rate is actually something that I wonder about. Some of it is just the way the game is right now. Everyone strikes out more than they did 10 or 15 years ago. But how does that aspect of Judge's game age?
The way that aging curves work, he's going to return to a 30% strikeout rate. You know, like he's at 25% now, but he's in his peak. So, you know, as the years come on, he's going to strike out more and more, and he's going to strike out 30% again. So at the end of his career, you'd expect him to strike out 30% of the time. You're just hoping he's still walking 10 to 15% of the time and hitting a bunch of jacks, but the batting average will go back down too.
Yeah, and like I also think maybe it'll be a bad contract over 10 years. You're the Yankees. You haven't won since 2009 now, and you've been playing this weird, like, let's not make splashy moves. Just sign the guy. I don't really care what he wants. Just sign them. Like, stop operating like you're a mid-market.
Or you're the Giants, who's like created a whole mix and match universe where you've got all these little pieces that fit together. Get the king piece and
there's something to be said for the Phillies and Middleton and spending money. right? And what they've been able to do here. And it's kind of like what kind of makes you want to pull for the Phillies, because you're like, wow, maybe other owners would be like, yeah, let's do this. You know, you're starting to see, you saw the Cardinals say that they were going to raise payroll. It's time to win. Like, let's see that more now. Let's see these teams go in, buy these free agents. Remember, Harper got crushed during that whole winter, and Manny Machado, about how they weren't worth this money. You know, they were so expensive. Well, last I checked, Harper is worth this just for this year alone. And Manny Machado carried the Padres to the NLCS. So maybe we do need to be spending money on free agents. Maybe going out and buying guys and worrying later about whether the deal got done or not got done. If Aaron Judge wins a World Series in New York, no one's going to care if he sucks his last 3 years. It's just how it goes. No one's going to care.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, you know, the way they actually, the way that they collectively bargained these playoffs to go, I expected to see, oh, there's two more teams in. That means everybody can just be mediocre. It didn't really work out that way. I think the teams that tried were rewarded for it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for example, the Phillies were a team that could have sat and been like, hey, we can probably win 86, 87 wins without adding a lot more to this team, you know, and then just try to get hot and go through the playoffs. But they added. They tried to get better. And if you think about, like, the Padres, they were a wild card team. They added. They tried to get better. They added salary at the trade deadline. So
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think most teams seem to want to get that bye. You know, the Dodgers may have even tired themselves out a little bit trying to get that bye.
Yeah.
And the bye didn't turn out to be like something where everybody who had a bye lost. So, you know, I think the way that this is structured, teams still want to get better, still want to spend a little bit, and they avoided just the every team wants to build an 88 win team and see if they can win.
Yeah, outside of Cleveland, they really weren't trying. And I'd like to see, I don't know, have you guys seen this anywhere? I'd like to see Cleveland be like, you know what? We're going to spend now because we see the beginning of this. We're gonna spend some money. Has anyone
seen
that?
We keep listening for that, but I haven't heard it.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, they could and should, because they would get a lot better on top of all the young talent coming up.
They used to. They spent a bunch of money when they were good, when they were in the World Series. And then it was like, oh, can't do that anymore.
I'm going to be talking about this weekend at the first pitch conference in Arizona, but the balanced schedule is something that people don't talk about very much. And I think that it is actually going to be really interesting for a team like Cleveland. The Cleveland Guardians had a 3.67 ERA against everybody that was outside of their division, and a 3.23 ERA against everybody inside their own division. The Cardinals slugged like 20 points higher in division than they did outside of their division. So there's going to be a little bit of a reckoning for some of these teams in the worst divisions. How they respond to that is going to be very interesting. They now have to play everybody. Everybody plays everybody. You can't just beat up on the Royals or the A's or whatever and bank those wins. So we're going to see a little bit of a change in baseball this coming season.
Well, there's a lot to get to as we move through the winter, but fortunately, we still have a little bit more baseball left. I think between now and the time the three of us get to record another pod, we will have a World Series champion. Britt has joined me on the dark side. I don't think it's the dark side. I think it's the
and I'm the king of waffles and chose not to waffle. I'd like to put that in the record.
You know, refrain from waffling and want a trophy for doing that. So.
Send us your trophy ideas. I mean, honestly, I should go back and find that clip where I just crushed the Phillies like in June or something. And now I'm like, yeah, I think they're going to win this. I think they're going to lose another game.
Not the waffler for once.
I think that the Phillies takes I can remember. I remember when Bryce Harper got hurt. I think I remember you said they were toast.
Yes,
I think when they fired Joe Girardi and replaced him with
you said it wasn't going to make a bench difference.
Coach, I said it wasn't going to matter. I agree with you. I said, that's just why would the manager's best friend in the dugout? Why would he change anything? And well, here we are. So hey, I'll take the small L. It's just for being skeptical of the managerial change.
But least. You did pick them in the series, so.
I should have been picking them in every series so far, though. Like I had the early inkling, and I came back late. So I'm here for it, Philly. I hope you find a way to get it done. That's going to do it for this episode of the 3-0 Show. You can find us on Twitter. Britt is at Britt_Giroli. Eno's at EnoSaris. I am at Derek Van Riper. If you want to read all the great coverage we have on the site, theathletic.com/baseballshow gets you a subscription for $1 a month for the first 6 months. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
Always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0.